is the Back Porch Education Podcast. Today on the show, Steve and I will discuss assessment, how to do it. Get your education. Back Porch Education. Good evening, good morning, good afternoon. Steve, I've got something since we're talking about assessment.
Well, you know, I really wanted to come and tell you I had a poem.
Okay.
So I, of course, Googled poems on hardship.
Okay.
And I got all kinds of preachy little ditties about, they all told me I couldn't do it, but no. I showed them. So we're back to the gift God has given you and withheld from me of finding appropriate poems.
No, this is a good one. This is, you'll recognize this from The Bard, one of his more famous plays, about a Roman Caesar. It's very short, but this is a snippet from Shakespeare's Julius Caesar. Again,
on friends, assessment. Romans, countrymen, cut off your ears. No.
Close. Ready? Cowards die many times before their death. The valiant never taste of death but once. Of all the wonders that I yet have heard, it seems to me most strange that men should fear. Seeing that death, a necessary end, will come when it will come.
Today, on the podcast, we're talking about how death may come through testing.
That's right. Oh, but isn't this how our student typically views assessment?
It's even how teachers,
how we, yes, absolutely.
Good. I don't know how many lunch conversations I've had where it's just sort of been this macabre comparison.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I remember when I took the NTEs, they lasted for 6 hours and I nearly died. And then Elliot's got to say, well, when I took my religious comps, it was 2 8-hour tests, one on a Friday and one on a Saturday.
Wow.
And testing me on a Saturday is not good anyway.
Right, right.
But, you know, it's sort of like war stories.
Mm-hmm.
The battles that we have survived. That old codger gave us a test like we'd never seen before.
Right.
I promise my sophomores every year that I'm coming up with a final exam, the likes of which you'll never forget. What I mean is, the material that I've taught you,
right,
I hope you have never forgotten.
Right.
But they think it's a threat, like,
yep.
I'm going to have to cut off some major limb
yeah.
as a part of test number 5.
Mm. That is sort of the way that we're taught and we teach to view testing, right? That it's this a necessary end. That death is coming.
Evil.
Yeah, exactly. It is, right? That this is just the way the world is, and it's terrible and awful and horrible, and everyone, but you just have to get through it. That cowards will die many times before their death. That is, cowards, that is, the unprepared student or the nervous student will fret constantly.
Spend all of their good study time worrying that they won't pass the test.
Right. And brave men only taste of death but once.
Like wise men.
Right.
Who
well
actually sit down and study.
Right. Or either that or the absolute buffoon.
Yes.
Right? That's who gives not a thought. And then that the you know dread comes over. Dread comes over them that day, and so they do taste of death, but it's only the once.
What test? Right. And the bell rings.
Right,
we got to test it. That bell polls for the Well, so why? Why the angst? Why the death knell? Mm-hmm. What is it about assessment that makes us all cowards? Because it is, I think, a commonplace to say that assessment is one of the hardest aspects of teaching.
Yeah.
And learning.
Right.
Why?
Why is it so scary? Well, as a student, I was afraid because I didn't know what would be on it.
Okay.
Right, because it was unknown. Let's
start there.
Okay, sure, yeah.
Is that legit? Is it a
good... Well, for some teachers, it certainly was.
But let's talk about education as we see it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Is the surprise element legit? What is accomplished by making it a mystery? Is it that we assume if we do this, they'll then study everything with equal fervor?
Right.
You know, I had a professor in college who gave us memory tests for scripture. Okay, I'm studying theology, and we'd be every quarter. I took him for two semesters, so there were four of these. Each quarter had 25 passages, not verses, passages.
Wow.
And the day of, when we had to come in and write these out from memory, he would write 8 of them up on the board.
Any 8 of the 25?
We had no idea what 8 were going to be put up there.
Right.
So there was those who, what you described earlier, the somewhat buffoonic people.
Yeah.
Who just says, well, I know the Bible. You know, I've got it all memorized. You know, and so they didn't study and they showed up and bombed.
Right.
There were the clever who attempted to, well, these are the passages that have something to divine. Do. Yes. You know, I guessed 7 out of the 8, or I guessed 2 out of the 8. Oh, rough. You know. And then there were us fools.
Fools for Christ.
That's right. who attempted to memorize all 25 passages so that we'd be ready for the test.
Sure.
And hated him almost for it. But I also understood that there was a benefit to only having to write 8 as opposed to the whole 25.
Right.
But this mystery did produce more learning.
Mm-hmm.
We actually, those of us that were legitimately trying to pass the class, made the good college try to memorize all 25 passages. It taught us a great deal about memory work and put a lot of scripture in our heads and hearts.
Right.
That if we'd have just known it was these 8, we'd have just done the 8 instead of 25. So I get that. But in the humanities, I don't tend to do that a lot. In fact, often my assessments are... I want to know that they had every opportunity to do as close to a perfect job as possible.
Right.
Many of my assessments are in written form.
Yep.
Even the quote-unquote tests are what my students would refer to as essay tests.
Mm-hmm.
And the prompts are out legitimately at least a week, often a month before the test.
Me too. So I don't give the... I think that in the sciences... There is the sort of test where I'm not just going to ask you what is the powerhouse of the cell because everyone will just remember mitochondria and they won't have any idea what the Golgi bodies do.
Right.
Okay.
Well, science in particular is full of these, what I call nergopharps.
Okay.
These meaningless words unless you attach meaning to them, unless you understand it.
Right.
It's just all these Latinized Greek form.
Yeah.
Gobbledygook.
Right.
That one causes, that's why many people say that science is just a practice in memorizing definitions of weird terms.
Yeah.
I don't agree at all that science is in making use of all of these.
Exactly. It's a conversation.
Yeah,
you just, to jump into this conversation, you've got to know these words.
Right. It's just the vocabulary.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I can see why I'm so... much more willing to say that my coworkers who teach in the sciences are doing a good job when they ask, when they have this sort of thing hidden, right? Mm. But then they just end up asking 50 questions when there were 200 that they could have asked.
Right.
Just because that's what it comes down to, right? You need to know all of them. I'll quiz you on the ones, and that'll be that. But for my students in English, I'm like you. I want to know that you have thought about this for a good long time.
Right. And I'm trying to divine not just knowledge, right, but mm-hmm. understanding, so connection of the parts in right. a meaningful whole. And in English, the big deal is the expression,
right? Yeah, yeah.
It is the ability to express oneself in written form. The mm-hmm. highest form of human expression, in my opinion, is the written form. Mm-hmm. So that's my ultimate goal.
Mm-hmm.
And thus, my assessment is formed out of that ultimate end.
Yeah, exactly.
If you can write me a good essay on it, I'm happy.
Absolutely.
Mission accomplished for now. Because you're never going to know it all.
Right. So well, that's not the point.
Right. The assurance is that you have started on this path, and you've come far enough to articulate some collected thoughts.
Right.
With the real hope and goal that this is going to carry on much further in your life than my class.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, you know, so when we talk about assessment, that's the first big question is, what are we assessing?
Mm-hmm.
Which is a question of ends.
Right.
So you got to know what it is that you're shooting for.
Yep.
To know whether or not you've reached it. If mm-hmm. it is just to fall over into one of the disciplines I've taught quite a bit, names and dates and places,
mm-hmm.
history class. That's too easy.
Yeah.
And there's almost, it, like you were saying earlier with the science class, you've just learned what's necessary to have the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
I want the person who's begun the conversation.
Yeah.
So.
And that's different. That's a lot different. Right. Right.
To ask a question, be it of value or of evaluation or of synthesis, or perhaps analysis, that, you know, what are the causes of the war between the states?
Mm-hmm.
If I'm a bad teacher, and I'm sorry to our listeners, I hope I'm not poking my finger in your eye.
Yeah.
But if I'm a bad teacher, at some point I've listed the causes of the Civil War up on the board.
Right, right.
And I'm now just looking for them to regurgitate that.
Yeah.
And the A student is the one who gets it word perfect.
Yeah, yeah.
What have you accomplished other than a short-term memory project
right.
that is gone
yep, yep.
by June, if not much earlier?
Right.
And, of course, notice I'm making the assumption that you've actually made it to the Civil War in your U.S. history course. Many teachers never right. make it there or never
right.
make it past.
Well, we know how you got there, right? it's by this sort of assessment. Yeah, that's a tough one.
So I would say that you're starting at the end. What is it that I want my students to know? And you're making choices about how you're going to teach it. And as you do that, you're making choices about how you're going to know that they've caught it.
Right.
That they've got it well enough to move on.
Right. Well, what you want them to know and what you want them to be able to do.
Yep.
Right? Yep. So in the sciences, which, man, science is getting a lot of positive play in this conversation.
One of us has a minor in science.
And it ain't so. Me.
I don't mind fighting for the old gal.
No, it's good. I like it. I don't find myself, I don't know, I'm like, I should have read Poe's To Science. Which is an amazing invective against science. I absolutely love it. I just don't find myself sticking up for science that often, but I love it.
For modern science education very much these days because okay. I feel that it is far too memory oriented.
Mm.
Now, I know there's the whole group that's going to say, but we teach with hands-on science and whatnot.
Right. Well, that's where I was going. I was going to labs.
Yeah.
Right. I was, because exactly. what you know, what you can know, okay, memory. and what you can do, right? The lab.
Yep.
And then there's also the sort of what can you do in conversation additionally.
Right.
That would be outside of either of those.
No, but so we're more back to, I think, an important aspect in my formation as an educator, and that's Mortimer Adler's three columns
that says there is knowledge,
and there is skills,
right,
and there is this notion of understanding, and that each right. has their appropriate vehicle
right.
that knowledge is best gained through lecture
mm-hmm.
of one sort or another. It might be the lecture of the text, it might be the lecture of the teacher, it might be a lecture of group interaction or whatnot, but it's basically transference of knowledge. And interestingly enough, he said, regardless of the subject, that should be 20-25% of the class time.
Nice. Nice.
Now there's this whole, what's the other?
Right.
And he puts a big emphasis on the fact that teaching to do takes more time than teaching to know.
Mm-hmm.
And so a good deal, the proper mode of teaching to do is coaching. Okay,
yeah.
So I'm writing.
I feel so good about all this editing work that I'm doing with all my students, like just editing their papers, like on the projector.
Yeah,
because you are
you're
corroborating what I'm doing. Yeah,
or we had a third grade teacher at one point
mm-hmm.
who when the projectors first arrived in the classrooms, I could just see her face. She just looked at that and went, "Oh yeah," and would sit there. And the kids would be composing with her as the fingers.
Okay.
And it would go up there, and there would be this discussion and this revision and this...
And an
essay in its glory would be made by the class.
Okay.
And then that took... So that's formative assessment.
Right, right, right.
Can you do what I'm trying to teach you to do? No, not like that, like this.
Mm-hmm.
We're not talking about grades at this point. We're talking about...
Yeah, just do the thing.
Let's screw it up.
Right, sure.
So that we can see how it screws up. And then let's do it the right way. But at some point, then, yes, the projector went off and the paper came out. And now you write,
mm-hmm.
you know. But you've already done it.
Yeah.
It's not this, what?
Right.
You know, go home and write me a paper on dogs. And I've had a son come home and I've... drilled him a little bit on what parameters. He just told us we needed a paper by Monday on dogs.
Right.
Did he tell you where to look? No.
Right.
Did he give you any notion of how long, what should be? No. Just write a paper on dogs. That's all he said.
Right.
That's cruelty.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
The child isn't, and this is a fourth grader.
Wow.
I have no concept of where to go with that.
Right.
And it's far too early to do that to a fourth grader.
Mm-hmm.
But with assessment, this is as much a judgment of the teacher
mm-hmm.
as it is the student.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why there's all the death
yeah.
language.
Right.
Is that so who of us hasn't taught and been grading going, no, no,
you're right.
You idiots.
You're right.
I know I taught you this, you know. And really what we're saying is not invective towards the students.
No.
We're working out the emotions of...
I bombed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is an assessment of me.
Yep.
Now, it's when the vast majority are doing well and you got little Billy over here
yep.
screwing up.
Right.
Now the disappointment, let's not use invective.
Sure.
The disappointment is with Billy.
Mm-hmm.
But when the vast majority are all getting it wrong, you know that indicates they weren't ready
mm-hmm.
for a summative assessment.
Right.
You're still needing to form in them the ability...
Right.
To do and to know. To do and to know. I think that distinction between art and science.
Right.
Of the content of the course and the ability to handle that content, to write well, read well, think well, in the science laboratory, experiment, measure, observe, etc.
Mm-hmm.
There's all of these abilities that we're developing. The interesting thing with Adler, to get finish him off, is that...
Yeah.
That you're spending 30-35% of your time building skills, mm-hmm. coaching them to write and read and think and solve problems, that sort of thing. Now you've got, what, 25 and 35, you've got about 40% of the class left, and you're thinking, what? There's only one thing left. And
ideas.
The beauty of it, yeah, the mode of ideas is seminars. It's discussion. Mm-hmm. It's Socratic.
Right.
And that is a combining of what you know and can do as a group.
Right, right, right.
Now it's the weaker and the stronger are challenging each other. And I do believe that the weak student challenges the strong student in helping.
Oh, sure.
Is there a virtue here of, I can't let him stay that way. I got to help him. It's clicked with me. I want it to click for him.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the weaker student is benefiting from that. But
well, and also the weaker student who is struggling to articulate something that the stronger student does not understand, right? Because mm-hmm. it has not yet been articulated.
Mm-hmm.
Then the stronger student, all of a sudden, they sort of become partners, right? And the stronger student has to say, well, but what when you say, mm-hmm. right, they're now having to identify mm-hmm. where they're confused, right? Mm-hmm. They're having to, yeah, there's a whole host.
The permanence of that, right? So part of the angst of teachers with tests is the incredible drop-off right after the test.
Mm-hmm.
2 months later, you're going, I taught you. You got an A in this. How come it all went away? Because it wasn't permanent.
Right.
Because it was for the test.
Right.
And so I believe seminar or discussion or Socratic learning or discussion, mm-hmm. conversation,
mm-hmm.
is one of the more permanent forms of learning, because it is minds exercising themselves against each other, as opposed to what you described earlier, the student trying to figure out what the teacher's likely to put on the test.
Right.
And I'm going to, in the privacy of my room, do my mnemonic magic or whatever, mm-hmm, learn mm-hmm. this stupid little song,
you know? Right.
And you know, there's a lot of humorous moments that come out of such devices.
No doubt.
I've seen a kid.
Half the Hebrew words that I remember are, yeah, exactly.
Sitting there singing to himself, waiting for the answer to come, and God bless you if it's right at the end of the song.
Right, right. Yeah. Well, I am reminded of a quote from Francis Bacon. A scientist, here I am again.
With the last name Bacon?
All right. I'm back in the scientist corner once again.
And mentioning Bacon.
Right. He says, and I'm struck by the resemblance to what you mentioned about Adler. What he says is, reading makes a full man. Conferences, a ready man,
mm-hmm.
and writing, an exact man,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
That each of these things serves different functions. And I think if you were to ask Bacon, oh, so which one should you do? He would slap you across the face.
Right.
Right? What are you talking? So you only want
to
be
are you
full?
Trying to make?
Right, exactly. You don't want to be ready or exact?
Yes.
You only want to be exact? You don't want to be ready or full? That's nonsensical.
Yeah, yeah.
We strive for all of these mm-hmm. things, right?
Together in somewhat balanced manner.
Right. And so assessments then, if you're, and it's very easy to do this for both the new teacher and for the more experienced teacher, we, I think, tend to create assessments that are only or at least primarily geared at finding out whether our students are full, ready, or exact.
Not all three.
But not all three.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's bad.
Yeah.
That's deficient.
Well, so let's talk about some of the challenges for a moment, because I don't want to just act like the average teacher's an idiot and we've got it all figured out.
No.
There are real reasons why we test poorly.
Mm-hmm.
The appetite of our constituents, right? The standardized test, the GPA,
mm-hmm.
the grade as a form of payment,
mm-hmm.
The kinds of things that we expect to come out of the classroom in order to get where we want to go, to college or to whatever, make a teacher want to make a certain kind of test, a test that readily applies to number and whatnot. And we've talked some of this. We have plenty of other things to talk about. I know we've got an episode here in the near future on standardized testing. But it must be admitted that it's not always a bad test because the teacher made a bad test. It's sometimes he's making the test that he's been asked to make.
That's true.
So administrators have and parents and our culture have a role to play in this. Bully to the teacher that resists that downstream current and says, right. "But I don't teach that way, so I don't want to test that way."
Yes, doing the Lord's work.
Doing the Lord's work. That's right. So this whole notion, I guess, of objectivity.
Oh,
that I want to ask questions that have an answer.
Mm-hmm.
So it's either right or wrong, and therefore. Out of 100 questions, you got 83 right, you got a B-level obtainment.
Mm-hmm.
It's radically influenced my teaching to move away from numeric grading.
Mm-hmm.
It's been 10 years now.
Yeah.
And it's all letter grades.
Right.
And the thing I have to talk about all the time is subjectivity. Mr. Elliott, this is just your subjective opinion of mine. You're absolutely
right.
That's why they pay me.
Right.
I supposedly have some sort of opinion that's worth comparing your work up against.
Right.
Now, I need to make sure that it's fair.
Sure.
That it's clear.
Mm-hmm.
That I'm willing to sit with a student and even at times adjust my assessment as I get a clearer understanding of what it was that was informing that assessment.
Right.
Right? I have changed grades.
Sure.
Sometimes for the better, sometimes for the worse.
Yeah.
The look on a child's face when he comes and speaks to me and then has a worse grade is precious. Now we're back to the poems about hardship.
Right, right. Cowards die many times.
Well, yeah. And it produces a kid that says, I'm never going to talk to him again. Right. Points. But I love the Bacon's three notions because it's you can't put that in a number,
right?
Or exactly. Even three numbers,
right?
Right,
right.
There's
well, I can, but if you ask me to do it again tomorrow, I'm not going to sign anything that's going to be the same.
Objectively do that.
Exactly right. Right. Exactly. Right.
And I tell folks all the time that an objective test has never been made.
Right,
but. I can save some of that for our standardized testing thing, but
yeah,
what questions are asked and what is there only one acceptable answer and just take the true false question for a moment, an absolutely horrible form of assessment.
Mm-hmm.
Because a thoughtful kid is going to think his way right out of Mr. Elliott, don't you understand that this could be both?
Right.
You know, and then when I start unlocking the tightly knotted nut that's going on in there.
Yep.
He's absolutely right.
Uh-huh.
He's overthought it.
Right.
Well, exactly what that you point, don't want a child exactly. to. Oh my goodness, he's thinking too much.
Right. Like that's the
shut up, man, and be a fool.
Just give him an A, right? Like, okay, wow. You're
right.
You're figuring
there
it out.
There are no wrong answers in my true false.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Or you start playing these stupid games. I did this one day with a this is my second year of teaching, but I was already getting so frustrated with the true false question. It's so easy to grade, right?
Oh yeah,
you can zip down through there, TF, 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 TF. So I made them all false.
Sweet.
Semester exam, 100 questions, every one of them's false.
Wow.
And then I toyed the next year with, if it's false, tell me why.
Ooh.
But I didn't do that
too. Yeah, yeah.
But oh, they were so mad. And the one kid got 100. He said around 53. I just decided these are all false. And I had no problem at all giving him 100.
Sure.
Clever for you.
Right, exactly.
Next time, the last one will be true. Because nobody will get 100 out of me. So the objectivity, the question of what it is I'm trying to assess.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a skill? Is it a knowledge? Is it an understanding? Is it wisdom? Is it virtue? How do you assess virtue? Well, we don't have time for Plato and
right.
Demeanor and all that sort of thing. But we have to deal with the fact that a lot of what makes it challenging is the common practice of America today, right? If we assess too unusually, it causes all kinds of questions. I don't mind the questions. My principal wishes I might not get them asked as often.
Yeah.
But it is interesting, right, that the high school, I saw this in junior high, certainly true in college. In fact, there's whole websites dedicated to this thing. Every teacher has their way.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's interesting to see students learn to figure that out.
Right.
And even share it with each other. Well, what sure. you got to do is, you know, to walk into, I walked into a class one time and a guy next to me says, I hear this guy counts off for handwriting. And I literally started sweating. I had terrible handwriting.
Okay.
And he came in and started teaching. And I'm looking at the way he wrote, and I was like, he uses all capital letters. Ain't that something? And then shortly before our first, he gave all essay tests in a biology class. This was a biology class.
Yeah.
And he was telling us that I will take a tenth of a point off for every incorrectly formed letter.
Wow.
So I just determined right then and there. I remember spending a whole night in my dorm room practicing his handwriting.
Wow.
And to this day, I write in all capital.
No kidding.
I do. I took four classes with that man.
Oh, my.
I'm telling you, it became, he taught me a habit.
Right. You became a true disciple.
Yes. Thank God he didn't write in cursive. Right. But yeah, some things are formed in you without your complete intellectual consent.
So that would be an interesting thing that he was assessing, mm-hmm. right? That was, I don't know. I mean, you know, you might ask the question: Is a science teacher within his rights to assess handwriting? Or is it the sort of thing that is like...
I blessed him for that. It.
Yeah. Okay.
I saw as a fellow working in two different, at times almost diametrically opposed departments of the school,
mm-hmm.
taking my major in a theology department and my minor in a science department, they at least agreed on this.
Yeah. Okay.
Right.
Sure.
And it does drive me a bit to distraction when a history teacher or a science teacher, doesn't happen in math too much, or a foreign language teacher, just somebody outside the English department neglects good writing.
Right. Penmanship.
These days penmanship isn't that big a deal because almost all of it's being typewritten at my level anyway. But no, grammar. Spelling.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, I have people trying to tell me that, oh, spelling shouldn't count in science. They're too hard. It should count doubly in science, because if you misspell a word, it doesn't
you
mean...
You might kill somebody.
Yeah, it just isn't the thing unless it's the thing.
Right, right.
Whatever. Deoxyribonucleic acid is not the same as ribonucleic acid.
Right, right.
Well, like it was close.
Sure.
Close will blow up the science lab. So, well, any comments as we wrap up? It'd be helpful, I guess, how to assess my assessment. How do you improve it? How do you... If we've at all raised awareness that there are problems with assessment, how do you go about fixing it? You got any thoughts?
Yeah, you need to take seriously the assessments when they come in. My first inclination, and I think this is a good inclination, is to doubt myself as test maker before I doubt my students.
What does that look like? Well, so if they're all stumbling on a particular aspect of the test, that's probably me.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, and even if they are just articulating, you know, I'll get a lot of students where I assign an essay, mm-hmm. right? And then I begin reading their essay. And you read and you read, and I go, wait a minute. This is starting to sound like as many multiple choice questions as you could think to just mash together, mm-hmm. right? To where the student is clearly trying to show that they have been listening, right? But I'm they not sure know it's a want. Modesty topos yeah. Yeah. in Chaucer, right? When he says, whatever, wake obey the oxen in me plu, but they don't bring that up in a way that illuminates why that's important. And so then I go, are they doing that because that's what I did?
Mm-hmm. Right.
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 I think that typically students try hard on assessments if you try hard in making it, and that they are going to try and give you what they think you want.
Mm-hmm.
If you're getting the wrong sort of thing, it's probably because they think you're asking for something other than right. what you're asking
right. you
for.
You haven't set up the target in the right part of the...
Right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think that's a big difference. So a great way to improve your assessments is through self-assessment. Why did they perform the way they perform? What about me brought out this result?
Yeah.
And I think that's a lot of it. I think what I often refer to as forest and trees.
Mm-hmm.
We put perhaps inordinate emphasis on a specific assessment
mm-hmm.
without recognizing that it's only a aspect of this. My students taught me this, right? I had a student at some point do poorly on a summative assessment, and I expressed some concern and sorrow. You know, I'm sad that, don't worry about Australia, I'll make it up on your next essay. You know, because I have essays that stretch out over a month that gotcha. They're working on, and they know those actually wind up counting more towards their overall grade than an in-class essay that's written in 45 minutes.
Right, right.
I don't grade it as much because it isn't as much effort.
Yeah, sure.
And so they're looking at the forest and going, this tree isn't as big as this tree.
Yeah.
It's no big sweat, Mr. I had a bad day, and I apologize. I wish I could have done better. But I'm not freaking out because wow. I know this over here matters a whole lot more to
That's
you,
good.
To my grade. You've given me time to do a good job over here.
Right.
And I, you know, that so even that is part of the self-assessment. That I ask more of them in that, you know, if I give them 45 minutes to quote unquote take a 100 question math test, I'm an idiot.
Yeah, right.
You know, unless it's times tables and it's a speed drill or something.
Sure, sure.
You're making them rush through it.
Yeah.
Right? Where five problems,
mm-hmm.
but ones that really show that they understand the concept.
Mm-hmm.
And 45 minutes is probably much more legit.
Right.
And easier to grade.
Yeah, a lot easier.
You know what I'm saying? So, some of this is just the wisdom that comes with doing it. And,
mm-hmm.
and that doesn't make your early students guinea pigs. Or does it?
Yeah.
I mean, they kind of are.
Well.
But hopefully, in a school setting, wiser, more experienced teachers are helping guide younger teachers, so nobody's really in the big picture a guinea pig.
Yeah.
But this is where homeschooling comes to the front, because a lot of homeschooling assessment doesn't need to be formal.
Right.
It's the end of the day.
Yeah.
That 10-minute conversation that they got it.
Mm-hmm.
Or, okay, tomorrow we're going to need to work on this a little bit more.
Right.
There's such immediate and...
It's so close and personal,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. Yeah. You know
mm-hmm.
when the light bulbs come on.
Right.
And you're cheering for it, right? Because it means you can move on.
Yeah, sure.
I'm doing a good job.
Sure.
That sort of immediate feedback for the teacher that a homeschool setting in particular rejoices in.
Yeah. No doubt.
Well, I want to mention as we close up that there is no way in God's green earth for us to cover assessment. Our purpose today has been to kind of go, we know this is a big deal. In fact, it's a big enough deal that a growing aspect that at this moment, according to this, isn't yet visible, but will be at some point. So, so check out our website if you see something called the side porch. We have a growing list of concerns there that are too big for a podcast, but really important. And so either one of us or both of us record a series of talks about something. Assessment is certainly a side porch.
Yeah.
A major piece of furniture on the side porch. Because assessment is a big deal and encompasses so many things. We've just kind of poked at it enough to say, this is a big deal.
Yeah. We
put a lot of thought into it.
No doubt. I mean, there are so many notions. There are so many divisions, right? Distinctions that we glossed over in an effort to provide a sketch, in an effort to intrigue. But yeah, I mean, there are several topics just in this conversation that really merit a deep dive.
Yep. And it'll get it. Just keep your eyes out and someday we'll get our act together and get all this working. But for now, recognize that you need to assess your assessments, but your students are going to do it for you.
Yep.
Their feedback's pretty important to how you're doing. And mine hate my essay test.